Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also the author of The Weed Agency, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. Hillary Clinton in the good and crazy. This is a statement that the Clintons have made in response to a number of books that have come out that are obviously very critical of them. Obviously, there's been a lot of accusations against Hillary in these books, and the Clintons are firing back with this statement. Their behavior should neither be allowed nor enabled. And legitimate media outlets, who know with every fiber of their being that this is complete crap, should know not to get down in the gutter with them and spread their lies. But if anyone isn't sure, let's strap all three to a polygraph machine on live TV and let the needle tell the truth.
This has David Brock's fingerprints all over it, and he's kind of, you know, affiliated with their crowd these days. Most people would say, you know, the accusations are nonsense, yada, yada, yada. But instead, their behavior should neither be allowed nor enabled. Not be allowed by who? You know? I mean, this is, you know, as I said, at some point, you know, presuming she wins, Hillary would take the oath of office and pledge to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution, except for the First Amendment rights of authors who criticize her. And then at one point, that'd be the little asterisk there. There is something really creepily authoritarian about this crowd. The whole thing about the polygraph machine on live TV, well, she's asking for her critics to do it. I suppose she'd be willing to do it as well, right?
Oh, I'm sure.
Also, remember Bill's on this as well. You know, Chelsea in there too. And then the next question is, or the observation is that, you know, you remember that case back in the late 70s, Hillary defending the rapist and getting him off from the accusation?
Correct.
Well, during that, she is quoted on a tape as saying, "I had him take a polygraph, which he passed, which forever destroyed my faith in polygraphs." So I guess you got her faith restored in it at some point. I'm just kind of scoffing at, you know, that Hillary Tuzla Dash, dead broke, did not have sexual relations with that woman, Rodham Clinton, vast right-wing conspiracy, is going to accuse other people of lying, and she's only telling the truth and all that stuff. Like, on the one hand, if your reaction to every bit of criticism is to react with this volcanic fury, I don't think she's going to handle the pressures of the campaign particularly well. Because in the process of reporting, there's going to be people who are going to say things you don't like. You know, we already know Hillary's credibility is pretty shaky. So now she's going to insist, no, everybody else is lying, and she and Bill and are always on the up and up and all that stuff. Except they have records of liars. So anyway, on that happy note, I think it's a sign that this is a very brittle campaign that's going to have a very hard time dealing with the criticism that is inherent to any campaign, much less the, you know, front-runner coronation status she is aiming for.
Some of these books are doing better than her book, but it's not like they're driving national conversation. Acknowledging this almost seems to elevate them rather than dismiss them, I would say.
Yeah, I suppose the aim here is to kind of preemptively say, oh, there's nonsense, and oh, this pish-posh, you know, this is all very silly. Halper's a pretty solid reporter, and my sense is that his book was much more about the financial ties of what they call Clinton Incorporated, you know, all the big corporations sucking up to the Clinton Foundation and things like that. And the New Republic did story, but this is not some, you know, vast right-wing conspiracy, to use a particular phrase. And the idea that she's basically decreeing all of this off-limits, while at the same time she's running on her experience.
As long as we're talking about legitimate media, let's go to our bad martini now and a little bit of a cajoling of our conservative media brethren, at least some of them. There was this call over the weekend between President Obama and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and there were readouts from both sides, and obviously there was some tension there. We can tell from the way John Kerry's been conducting himself that the Obama administration's goals and Netanyahu's goals are not the same. But this outfit called Channel One released a supposed transcript of this conversation that depicted Obama as being quite demanding and, in many analyses, rude towards Netanyahu. Both governments have denied that this transcript is anything close to accurate. Still, there's been Fox News hosts, many different conservative websites going forward, essentially bringing on guests, asking them to react to this as if it's proven to be true. And it could be, just because, you know, they both denounce it doesn't mean it didn't happen. But without some actual proof, it's irresponsible to go forward with full-blown analysis of this, Jim.
The entire, like, the first thing is that they, as far as I know, they originally said this was a transcript. and it doesn't read like a transcript. You know, the sentences are very stilted. I realize we're getting an English translation of something that's coming from Hebrew. But at the very least, you've got to say that this is an account of this phone call to begin with. Don't pretend this is what they said if it's not what they said. And, of course, the wording really matters here, of, you know, whether the president was as condescending as the report would indicate, and whether it would be as you know, contentious as the report would indicate. But even then, it just didn't ring true in that, you know, let's say, you know, for all of Obama's flaws, he's not usually terrible to people's faces. The idea of Obama, you know, making demands of Israel's prime minister and expecting them to be obeyed, for all of our flaws and criticism of Obama, he doesn't seem dumb enough to think that he can give Benjamin Netanyahu an order and that Netanyahu will say, yes, sir. Particularly when it comes to, you know, ceasing taking actions that Netanyahu thinks are necessary for the defense of Israel. So the whole thing kind of emitted an odor from the beginning. I think what was kind of, and the reason this really stands out as our bad martini is the discussion afterwards. Look, I'm not a fan of Obama. You're not a fan of Obama. I'm going to guess a large chunk of our listenership is not a fan of Obama. We get that. We're all established that here. Because you don't like someone doesn't mean you automatically believe everything negative you hear about them. And in this case, it almost seemed like a little bit of wishful thinking or something. And the number of people would say, well, sure, it sounds like, well, actually, no, it doesn't. But then, like, because it was bad, because it reflected badly on Obama, it was kind of like that poster from the X-Files, I want to believe. Well, you can't let your wanting to believe steer you into believing things that there isn't, you know, sufficient supporting evidence for. And a lot of people say, oh, you know, Obama, you know, hates Israel and all that stuff. Well, whatever Obama's personal thoughts are Israel on, we just resupplied the Israelis some ammunition and various, you know, parts that they needed. So if Obama were really this vehement Israel hater, why did we go forward with that? You know, I kind of have this tough time believing in the worst stereotypes of, or the worst narrative of Obama hating Israel, which is not to say that I think he's a particular fan of Israel, or that he's necessarily always going to act in Israel's best interest or things like that. So it just seemed a little excessive credulity on the part of some conservative folks. And it really came from, because it made Obama look bad, they wanted to believe it.
Check our archives for the bad martini. There's plenty of verifiable reasons to question the Obama administration's policy on the Middle East. But trying to force this into the narrative without proper verification seems to be forcing it quite a bit. So
there's enough on the record statements from Israeli lawmakers.
Exactly.
That, you know, like you don't need the transcript, you know, just quote them what they're saying about John Kerry.
All right. On to the crazy martini now. And as foreshadowed at the beginning, it's Hillary Clinton once again. And this is also once again from her Fusion TV interview with Jorge Ramos. For some reason, he brings up the issue of the Washington Redskins.
Almost 50 Democrat senators sent a letter to the NFL saying that Redskins is a racial slur. Do you agree?
I think it's insensitive, and I think that there's no reason for it to continue as the name of a team in our nation's capital. I would love to see the owners think hard about what they could substitute.
Any suggestions? Any different name?
No, I haven't thought a lot about that.
She still isn't quite demanding it like Harry Reid and some of the others are, but as usual, Hillary dipping her toe into the water before figuring out exactly what she thinks.
Well, the two things that jump out of that statement, which is pretty bad. And again, you know, you can count on, by the time Hillary embraces something, you know, it's definitely conventional wisdom in liberal circles. She's never going to get out too far in front of the rest of her party or the liberal movement out there. But the one thing is that, one, she says it's obviously insensitive, and she's lived in Washington since 1993. I'll have to see if she's ever been to a Redskins game. Now, the other thing I got to point out is, as we all remember, when she ran for Senate in New York, she's always been a Yankees fan.
Right.
So perhaps she's always had this affiliation rooting for New York teams, perhaps the Giants, perhaps the Jets, growing up in Illinois and spending much of her adult life in Arkansas. So maybe that's why. But for some reason, she's always believed this was insensitive. But by golly, you know, only now does she feel the need to say this. And then she says, there's no reason for the team to continue with that name. No reason, really? You can't think of any reason why, you know, tradition or the fact that, you know, millions of people have been rooting for this team, you know, for generations, and that nobody really believes that this is meant to be disparaging to Native Americans, or that it's actually genuinely hurting Native Americans living today. And, you know, the term is archaic, undoubtedly. You may even say it's a little bit mean, but the idea that this is really doing some sort of harm to Native American communities today is pretty implausible. But none of this stuff enters her mind, and she literally can't think of these things. So I guess we should just be glad, Greg, that she didn't demand that Daniel Snyder take a polygraph and be asked whether he thinks it's not offensive.
Yeah, two very definitive statements.
It really shouldn't be allowed, Greg. I guess that's the thing. It just shouldn't be allowed. And under a Hillary Clinton presidency, maybe it won't.
Now, I know a lot of conservatives, even if they don't really care about the Redskins, they don't like the way the team's being bullied. If you don't like the Redskins, and Jim and I don't, make sure you don't let this influence the way you feel about the team. You can feel like a private owner has the right to do whatever they want with their name, but don't let that influence you into actually hoping they win.
Yeah, there's a couple of weird things here. One is that, and I would point out, Greg, there are times I've kind of felt, if not rooting for the Redskins, let's just say a marginal sympathy under the acknowledgement that this is an unbelievable, unbearable town to be in when the Redskins stink. You know, we talk about how local news will tell you about what's wrong with RG3's anterior cruciate ligament before they tell you about ongoing terrorist attacks. So there's that aspect. And then the second thing is that, look, if, I don't know about you, if I was naming a team today, I would not pick the name Redskin. Right? I think I can safely say it's not a nice term. But, you know, then you get into, well, wait, what about Cleveland Indians? What about, you know, the Chiefs? What about the Braves? All this other stuff. And so the next thing is that, like, you know, for all of the, you know, even if you think it's the worst thing in the world, if you're a Native American activist and you want to protest outside the games, go right ahead. You have that First Amendment right. That's the art, you know, the art of public persuasion. You go right ahead. When members of Congress start writing, you know, not so subtly threatening letters to Daniel Snyder and things like that, then it kind of turns into this bizarre. Like another example, just kind of, you know, you said bullying, a sense of, you know, guys, like, you know, an unbelievable amount of focus from our Congress, and it really isn't any of their particular business. And then the next matter is just a matter of, like, you know, ISIS is on the march, you know, our southern border is being overwhelmed, Ebola has broken out and we have no border security, you know, like, oh, there are really big problems in the world, and people are really upset about a football team name that's been around for 70 years, and somehow we've all managed to live through it. So you knew we were going to come back to this. It seemed like a Hillary Clinton martini, but let me tell you, Greg, way to go, Nevada. Way to go.
Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, see you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review, also author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.